Hello and welcome to another edition of Critical Q&A, the show where I answer your questions based on what you've left for me in the comments section of my Q&A videos or have sent to me by email at askchrisshelton@gmail.com. I had a wondrous, wondrous podcast this week with Ross and Carrie from the Oh No, Ross and Carrie podcast. We talked Scientology and various other things, and it went really, really great. It was just a great podcast. So if you haven't seen that, check it out. And also, for those of you who didn't hear last week, my line of clothing is now available online. The link is below at the Critical Merchandise Store. This is another of my creations, and I've got more coming. Since last week, in fact, I put up another two. And there will be more of that coming. It's a great way to support me and my show and also get something in return. And I get a little bit of something back on each sale, and so do you. And so I wanted to put something out there for you guys that has also been something you've asked for because, you know, of course, me and my voluminous t-shirt collection, some of those t-shirts were created by me. And now I've put designs together that you guys can get. So enough of that commercial self-endorsement there, but I thought you guys would want to know about that. And again, the link is below in the notes section on YouTube under Critical Merchandise. It's also on my website on the Critical Thinker at Large website. There is a link to buy merchandise, and you can check that out. So let us get on with your questions for the week. We've got a lot. Ace Ventura. When you were going to all the different orgs and seeing the fail that COB was creating with the ideal orgs, were you doing any auditing during this time? What about sec checks? Could you explain how a Sea Org mission works? A Sea Org mission is basically like a project that two or more Sea Org members are sent out on in order to get a very specific thing done, usually at a location remote from a Sea Org base. Very rarely are Sea Org missions sent from a Sea Org base to its own base. If there was a specific, you know, backlog project or some kind of handling that needed to be done, then they might do that on their own base and fire a mission in order to get that project done. But most of the time, they're sending them somewhere else. Missions are something that Hubbard started back when he was on the ship, on the Apollo, running Scientology internationally from that ship while it was sailing around. And when orgs like, you know, Tampa or Austin or Milano or whatever org around the world was, you know, not getting its shit together, was not getting stuff done according to what management was directing that it get done, Hubbard would send a couple Sea Org members out there to kick ass and take names, basically. And he wrote various policies and issues laying out how missions are supposed to be done. Missions are supposed to be very snap and pop, A to B, rat-a-tat-tat, dot-dot-dot-dot-dot, you know, sort of activities where you go there, you get the project done, and you get back, and that's it. And there's no messing around. And Sea Org members who go on these missions have to be trained on special classes called mission school, right? There's mission schools, second class and first class, and you go and you do this training. Every Sea Org member does it. And then you're eligible to go out on these missions. There's a lot that I could talk about with missions, but that's kind of encapsulating what it is. And I went on lots of missions when I was a Sea Org member because I worked in management and situations had to be dealt with that sometimes required a personal touch, required a person going there and getting things done because the local staff weren't getting it done. Or later on in my Sea Org career, I went out to do these ideal org missions where we were going out and recruiting a bunch of people because there was no way that the staff at the local church were going to get all of that recruitment done. Or I was recovering people back into Scientology because, again, the local staff were not getting that done. And then the final mission that I went out on was actually when we opened Twin Cities Church of Scientology in its brand new 90,000 square foot building. We had a mission there that were four of us in order to kick the staff in the butt and get them going and get all these new people, you know, running the organization the way Hubbard said they're supposed to run it. And of course, that's not what we were doing, really. We were really there making sure that they were making money for the IIS, but that's a whole separate discussion. So as far as me getting auditing, the reason that this is all into this question is when you're out on a mission, you do not get study and you do not get auditing. And I was out on mission a lot. So for the last 3 to 4 years of the time that I was in the Sea Org, since I was out on these missions and projects all the time, I wasn't getting any auditing, which was nothing new for me because in the 17 years that I was in the Sea Org, I very rarely got any auditing. But I did get a lot of sec checks and security checks, which is the confessionals where they ask you for your crimes and that sort of thing. And you're sitting there holding the meter and you have to, fess up when something comes up on the meter to confess. So after, part of being on a mission is when you come back from a mission, you're supposed to get a return from mission sec check. I very rarely got those because, we were always in such a hurry and there was always a turnaround and that sort of thing that they didn't always follow the policy that they were supposed to follow on this. And I got a couple of them, but I didn't get one every single time. And the return from mission sec check was usually just a few questions. I think it was maybe 4 or 5 questions or something, like while you were on mission, did you do anything that was, did you commit an overt while you were on mission? Did you do anything that you shouldn't have done? That sort of thing, right? While on your mission, are you hiding anything about your mission? While on your mission, did you go off your mission orders? Those kind of questions, right? When you're on a mission, it's not just a roll your own, figure it out as you go sort of thing. You have a specific set of mission orders, which are targets to get done at the place you're being sent to. And when a mission is being briefed, there's a whole process to this, and the briefing is the first phase. You get the missionaries, you prep them, and you brief them so that they know what it is that they're supposed to do. The mission orders are written, they read them, and then you check each other out on them. You ask questions to each other, make sure you understand what the mission orders are all about. And then you guys who know about Scientology and clay demos, and you're supposed to actually put the mission orders in clay. And so there's a big table and a lot of clay, and you're making all these little clay figures of you and the other people on the mission and where you're going to go and what you're going to do, and you have to demonstrate all of this in clay. And then when you're on a mission, every day you're reporting back by telex, which is basically an email, to the mission operator, the mission ops. So there's somebody who's running you and keeping an eye on you and making, and you're supposed to report back to this person every day with duns, right? Not every target you report on, and the target is either not done or it's in progress, or it's bugged, meaning you're trying to do it, but you can't get it done for some reason, or it's done. And the whole idea is to get them all done, of course. And when all the targets are done, then you come home. Or if the mission is a total failure or a flop and the mission gets all bugged up or can't get done, then they pull you back, and that's called being recalled. Your mission got recalled. And if you get recalled, you're generally in a lot of trouble when you get back. You can get in a lot of trouble depending on the seriousness of the mission and how severe it was that you screwed up while you were out there. So there's always a little bit of a risk factor being out on a mission. But I found missions to be lots of fun because they were very something I was going out and doing that was different, and I got to kind of go out there and use all my skill set and everything, and you had to think on your feet and figure things out. And it was very unusual. Every activity that you go out on a mission and doing generally tended to be kind of interesting stuff in one degree or another. From my, I'm of course speaking from my viewpoint as a Sea Org member at that time. I mean, I look at it now and I'm like, Jesus, what a waste of time. But at the time, it was the best I could get, And so I liked being out. Plus, when you're out on mission, you eat out all the time. So I didn't have to eat the crap shit food that they were serving us on the base. And you stay at hotels, so you're staying at a pretty nice place compared to your crap-ass room that you're in when you're on the Sea Org base, right? Because I had this little tiny room with my wife, and it sucked. So I had a hotel room, I had a TV, all this kind of stuff, right? But you don't individually have your own room. Generally speaking, you know, you're going out with another person. They're keeping an eye on you. You're keeping an eye on them so you guys don't go totally off the rails. And so it's not like we're really sitting around watching a lot of TV. But if you were out on mission with somebody else who wasn't going to report you and you weren't going to report them, you're like, hey, let's watch some TV. And it's like, okay, it's all good, right? Or you sit there and play around on your laptop and, you know, mess around on the internet, right? And this is how I would spend my time when I wasn't working, you know, when I'd get, you know, secure late at night. So I generally enjoyed being out on mission compared to the crazy antics and frantic emergency situations that were always going on the base. It was so much better to be out on mission, even though often when you're out on mission, there is a lot of pressure on you to get the targets done and get back. And some of these missions I was out on went for a couple weeks. Other ones went for months. The final one that I was on was a months long thing, and it looked like we were going to be there for like a year. And keep in mind, that whole time that I'm out there on those missions, I was away from my wife, which is one reason why my marriage, after a few years of this, eventually tanked. So that is how missions work, and at least a summary encapsulation of them, and also answers why I only got sec checks during those times that I was out there and I wasn't getting any auditing. Ben Johnson. If Scientology doesn't want to be viewed as a kooky space alien cult, then how do they explain away the Church of Spiritual Technology? Scientology scriptures sealed in 2,300 titanium capsules in calamity-proof vaults in the middle of nowhere? Titanium is not cheap, and digging bomb shelters in the desert with directional markers carved in the earth that can only be seen from the air or space, sure, that sounds completely not weird. What was your knowledge of these sites when you were in the Sea Org? Did you have any second or third-hand knowledge of what these vaults were really like? Shiny and high-tech, I hope. Or is this the ultimate con with 100% of the money that is regged for the CST funneled into the IAS slush fund? No, it is not a con. There is a lot of money that the Church of Scientology has poured into these vaults, as you have seen, you know, or can see on the internet if you look up Tremencia or, you know, Church of Spiritual Technology or Hidden Scientology Vaults. You will find pictures and, you know, photos and maps and Google Earth imaging of these locations. And Scientology, the Church of Scientology, is very serious about preserving L. Ron Hubbard's work for all of eternity. It is how L. Ron Hubbard chose to become immortal. And he always had the goal, and I think he wrote in some letter back in the 50s, to one of his secretaries or something, he wrote to his wife one time earlier than Dianetics, that he wanted to slam his name into history and be remembered forever. And this was, his brainchild to do that. I did not know, and no Scientologists or Sea Org members are aware of, or at least are supposed to be aware of, those bases. They're not supposed to know where they are. They're not supposed to know who's working there. They're not supposed to know what goes on at them. They were ultra, ultra, ultra confidential. And I, while I was in the Sea Org, knew absolutely nothing about where they were located or anything about them. They are, the Church of Spiritual Technology is something most Scientologists don't know about, believe it or not. And this is one of the reasons why I say people outside of Scientology know more about it than people who are in. Because if you don't go on the internet and look this stuff up, then you're never going to find out about it. There is no written L. Ron Hubbard issues or lectures or anything about the Church of Spiritual Technology. It was all that was incorporated and come up with in the early 1980s as part of the Scientology's corporate restructuring. And then money was put into the Church of Spiritual Technology to get it going. And then they have regged Scientologists to contribute to the Preserve the Tech project. And they have shown Scientologists, okay, that it's not that Scientologists don't know that this preservation is happening. It's just they don't know anything about the specifics of where and who, right? They know that this is going on. They just don't know anything else. They were shown in the 1980s when there was a lot of research being done on all the NASA space technology to preserve this stuff and all the archival research that was done to, you know, decide to put the Hubbard's works on titanium plates and put them on these, I think, nickel-plated records, right, that could be played on a solar-powered record player. You know, the idea being that if a nuclear war occurred or if civilization somehow wiped itself out, that this information would be preserved for all the ages. And there are not just Hubbard's works on titanium plates and nickel-plated records, but also kindergarten-level reading books and first and second, third grade books. So somebody who knows nothing about English or a language or a culture or any of that theoretically could get hold of this material, learn English from these books, and then hear and read what L. Ron Hubbard had to say about things. And there's dictionaries. I mean, everything has been thought through on this stuff. It's very thorough. There are Sea Org members who've been doing this for many, many years, and very few of them, really, literally, just a handful. And that's the project. So that is what I know about it. And almost everything that I learned about the inner workings of it, I found out online from the one person, I believe, one person, Dylan something, who defected, was an ex-member of the Sea Org who took off, who had worked at one of those locations. But believe me when I tell you that CST is under lockdown. You know, people have tried to drive out there or go out there or visit those places, and they are definitely met with a very cold shoulder, and no one goes near those places. So that's what I know about that. Omega Man, I have come to have great trust in your ability to discern between facts and BS. There are, however, a few subjects where your positions indicate to me you either did not come upon some info I have, or you did and filtered them out as BS while I didn't. In a recent Sensibly Speaking podcast episode, it seemed the general point was made that conspiracy theorists are crazy to think their government would go to that extent to harm their citizens or to behave in a way that is directly detrimental to them. I hope I did not understand you right. In point and fact, there are countless examples where the U.S. government, amongst others, have directly engaged in terrorist activities on their own soil or that of allied nations. Don't tell me you don't notice how society uses all cultic tactics to keep people in the fold. Please help me become reasonable too. Please tell me, demonstrate to me I'm wrong. Help me throw up my red pill. All right, conspiracy theories. I'm only going to talk about this for a few minutes, but let me clarify a couple things. I have never, ever said, or even really tried to imply, that there is no such thing as a conspiracy, whether at a governmental level or international level, within corporations or anything like that. Of course there are conspiracies, and I believe I have said that they exist, and that there is no question in my mind that the U.S. and other governments do carry out projects and activities that are harmful to their citizens or a group of people in an effort to, you know, figure out some military advantage, or in the case of, say, MK Ultra, figure out mind control or something like that. The CIA, the NSA, you know, they have some pretty unsavory characters working there. And I've never, ever disputed that, okay? What I have said, and what I'll say again, is that I do not believe in wild-ass bullshit conspiracy theories involving the Illuminati, lizard people from other dimensions, or the idea that there are 12 men who are running everything in the world. And I've said this a lot, so that's why you may sense a little bit of impatience on my part with this, is because I've tried to make it clear that I think conspiracy theories of that nature, right, global conspiracy theories, I think those are nonsense. I don't think that there is some invisible hand, you know, 3 feet back of society, you know, manipulating events in some masterful way. And I'll never forget a British politician or one of the, you know, prime ministers out there or something, when asked to comment on this one time, just sort of ruefully shook his head and said, well, if there's some big conspiracy that we're all involved in, we're certainly doing a pretty bad job of it. Because if you look at the amount of chaos, nonsense, and stupidity that goes on in the world, especially at a government level, then you see that there is no way that there is any sort of master plan being enacted against all of us. And it's this is the David Icke, Alex Jones type theorizing that I'm talking about. I can't stand that stuff. It is so full of logical fallacies and nonsense and assumptions and all kinds of other things that's why I made a video about it saying why conspiracy theories suck. So that's my take on that. Now, there's also another thing I'd like to point out, which is called the devil's theory fallacy, as Robert Heinlein called it, or it's sometimes referred to as Hanlon's razor, right? And this has been written down in various ways, but it's basically comes down to the idea you have attributed conditions to villainy that simply result from stupidity, right? Never attribute to malice what you can easily attribute to, stupidity or ignorance. People do stupid ass stuff. And just because somebody works at the NSA or the CIA or some other, alphabet organization doesn't mean they're not idiots. Our House of Representatives and our Congress are full of people whose IQ is very, very questionably above average. And these people make serious intellectual blunders every day. And I assumed for years that because somebody was working in the government, was in the Congress, was the president, that they were smarter than me, that they knew so much more, that they were so much more educated. And it took me years to beat that out of my head, right? In fact, only fairly recently has that really, really come to the forefront as a very bad, poor assumption on my part to think that that just because somebody works in the government or something that they're smart. And of course, there's some of you out there right now shaking your head going, Chris, you're an idiot. Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I was an idiot for thinking that. So I look at every time I have dived into or drilled down into the details of a conspiracy theory on a global scale, I find nonsense. When you look at real conspiracies that have happened, right, like Watergate, that was a real conspiracy. It was really busted very quickly. A lot of these conspiracies are. They don't last very long. People have big mouths. They talk. Or somebody gets caught and then they're offered a plea bargain or a deal if they, confess who else was involved. And then the whole house of cards comes tumbling down. So I guess really what I'm trying to say is, yes, conspiracies happen. Yes, governments do bad things. Yes, corporations do bad things. Yes, they collude to keep bad things they've done secret for fear of being found out, for the repercussions or the backlash that they would suffer as a result of that. Yeah, that happens. Of course it does. I think that it happens because of malice or evil premeditation a lot less than people think. I think most of it is attributable to sheer ignorance. We're very bad as a species at predicting unintended consequences of our actions. And we do things all the time that are not in our best interests, thinking that they are in our best interests. And I think that's what we see when we see a good example is The Big Short, a movie I just watched again the other day, where the small group of people who knew about it, had predicted that this was going to happen, had a very hard time believing, as it got worse and worse and worse, that people were this stupid. In Wall Street, that all these bankers and these stock people and the housing market people and mortgage lenders and all these thousands of people, how could all of them be so stupid as to let this happen? But guess what? They were that stupid. And the people at the top were that greedy. And that's really all it comes down to. It wasn't a premeditated, planned, false flag operation. It was just sheer ignorance that caused that whole housing market collapse to happen. And that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. So I hope I'm making myself clear about this, and I hope that helps answer your question. and hopefully cough up your red pill. Jeff Smith, when explaining the difference between the whole and the RPF, you mentioned those in the whole have been declared SP by Miscavige. However, they still do their jobs in the church and are at gold base. Doesn't that go against the rules? I know Miscavige makes his own rules and does not care, but he is directly going against LRH. How do public and lower members not see Miscavige is breaking the rules of the church? How do Scientologists not in management reconcile all the actions Miscavige takes that clearly break LRH policy? Okay, well, first off, Scientology is one of the most rapidly shrinking groups over the last decade or so, specifically because of the fact that a lot of people who are in Scientology do see the contradictions, do see that what Miscavige is doing and what L. Ron Hubbard said to do aren't, you know, in congruence. And they, you know, then do their internet research or due diligence, or they start talking and figuring out that this is not good, and so they leave. That leaves you with the people who are still in the Church of Scientology who basically take everything Miscavige says on faith. They believe what he says because they need to follow a leader. And they are conditioned, as I've gone over in many, many times before, that that they just sort of, you know, when the cognitive dissonance turns on and the zzz, you know, between Hubbard said and Miscavige says, they just kind of go, nah, well, you know, he's David Miscavige. He must know what he's talking about. And they're aided in this cognitive dissonance by the sheer volume of material that L. Ron Hubbard wrote and the thousands of lectures that he gave, and also knowing, because every Scientologist, you know, who is fairly educated on the subject knows that there's a whole bunch of L. Ron Hubbard material that they are never going to see. Not because it's confidential, not just the OT level material I'm talking about, but management references, management lectures, things that he told management to do that they're not ever going to be privy to. And management and managers and Sea Org people can always fall back on that because they do have issues and references and things that they've read that they can't show the public. They just go, well, you know, because it's in a policy letter, or not a policy letter, really. They're called flag orders, or there's also Central Bureau orders, and there's, you know, Sea Org executive directives. There's all kinds of issue types that exist for management and for the Sea Org that the public are never going to be privy to. They're never going to see it. And so that, you know, becomes a, if some public gets a hair up their butt about something that Miscavige is doing, they'll be told, shut up, Miscavige is Miscavige, he knows what he's doing, he's the leader of Scientology, look at how great Scientology's doing, you have no right to question him, and the person will either fall in the line or they'll end up blowing Scientology. And that's how Scientologists have been dealt with for years within the church. No Scientologist is aware of the fact that the whole exists. At least they shouldn't be. No Scientologist is aware of the fact that all these people, that Miscavige decimated management, and that he's running the show by himself up there and just ordering these people about. And if they have some inkling of it, they either don't care or they know that there's no way they're ever going to really find out about it. And they don't want to look at the internet. They don't want to believe what they have to read there, because then that means that puts them on a path toward leaving Scientology and leaving, you know, their hope of personal spiritual immortality and freedom. So, you know, it's this whole, you know, weighing the pluses and the minuses and that sort of thing that go on with the public Scientologists. So as far as your first question, yes, Miscavige conditionally, I should have said this before, he conditionally declared these people who he puts into the hole, right? And so they go along with it because Miscavige is in charge. Miscavige is Scientology. He is the Sea Org. And they feel, these Sea Org members, these Sea Org executives feel they have no choice. And they don't want to be declared. They still want Scientology. So they go along with it. And that's, I think that's about the simplest way I can put it. Your Heavenly Father, I am in the medical field, and I wonder how well the staff are taken care of medically. Since the corporate lifestyle of Sea Org staff is one of isolation and minimum provisions, are women able to access obstetric gynecological care? Are there doctors on hand to treat these folks for general illnesses and provide medicines? Also, is there any way I can get you to say the words Erlia Semela in LRH's voice? Okay, well, I just said that for you in LRH's voice, so that's all you get. No, there are not a lot of doctors on hand in the C organization, which is where I'm answering this question from, not general Scientology, but C org members. No, they don't have doctors. They go to county. They go to the local hospitals. They get welfare. They don't pay for their services. And they generally, Sea Org bases have, arrangements with local hospitals. The hospital knows that the person who's coming from the Sea Org is making $50 a week or whatever, and they're on the dole. And they get service and treatment that way when they absolutely positively have to have it. That Scientologists, Sea Org members especially, will hold out on getting medical help until the last possible minute. And I've seen more than a couple Sea Org members die of cancer and other illnesses or diseases because they did not go get proper medical care in a timely fashion. Their mission for the Sea Org is way too important for cares of the body, and so they let it go and let it go and let it go. And yeah, that's a thing. There are, and one exception I should say, is there was or have been dentists who have been posted at the international base in Hemet, California, at the Gold Base. There was a dentist in PAC, in the PAC base. There was a Sea Org member who was a trained dentist. And an office was built for her and set up so as to save money for the Sea Org. It was all about the money. It's always about the money. And they set up the dentist so that the Sea Org members would have a dentist to go to. And I don't know, I think I got like 3 teeth pulled or something. She was real big on pulling teeth. Not real big on replacing them. I still got a nice big hole in my mouth right now because she pulled a tooth and I haven't gotten it filled yet because it's pretty damn expensive to get that done. So anyway, that's the dentist thing has been done. And also there was, this is debatable, I know, with a lot of people as to this being a medical professional, certainly not a trained doctor, but there was a Sea Org chiropractor who was also on the base for a little while. But those things go, you know, they come and go because, it takes money to invest in a dentist office to keep it going and keep it up. And the one who was in the PAC base was on and off her post. You know, she'd get used for other things all the time. So it's flash answer time. Nick C., you mentioned in your videos in your book that you grew up in Pasadena, started as a Scientology staffer in Santa Barbara, and spent a large chunk of your time with Sea Org in Los Angeles. When you got out, there was a limbo period in Minnesota, and then we see you doing your wonderful work in Colorado. Did your experience with Scientology ruin Southern California for you? Yeah, I'm afraid it did. I hate Los Angeles. I can't stand it. I grew up in Pasadena. Love Pasadena. Pasadena is sort of its own little world, and I like it there. It's kind of not Los Angeles. But as far as the rest of Southern California goes, I'll be fine. I'll be happy for the rest of my life if I never go back there. It takes either going to see somebody I really want to see or visit, or a professional need of some kind for me to go out there. I don't go to Los Angeles because I like it there. I don't like it there. Tabla Queen. Hi, I'm curious about something. Bob Geldof's late daughter, Peaches, had a one-night stand with a guy who then posted about it on the internet. He said they had taken heroin together and then gone to the Scientology Celebrity Center and gone through something to detox there. Since her death, it has come out that she was a heroin addict, so that part is probably true, and she certainly was with the guy as he had the photos. And she was into Scientology for a while, but do you think it's likely that she would have been able to bring some guy with her into the Celebrity Center and they would have had some detox thing there? Maybe he could have gone with her to do the purification rundown. That's their detox program. I can't really say. You know, it's within the bounds of legitimate, you know, possibility that could have occurred, but I can't say anything else with any certainty. Sorry. Matthew Reynolds. Hey, Chris, here is a flash question. If scents are banned in the SO, what do you use for aftershave? Witch hazel? Alcohol? Also, since DM plays by his own set of rules, do you know if he wears cologne? I didn't use anything for aftershave. I had an electric razor, and when I used a regular razor, I just shaved, and that was that. Scents are a big deal in the Sea Org. You are not allowed to have scented products. It is just verboten. Just nobody does it. So you might use, you know, some hand lotion, or you might get some unscented aftershave if there was any such thing. But generally speaking, Sea Org members don't wear aftershave. They don't, you know, that would be, what's the word, excessive? Like, no Sea Org member would want to spend the measly amount of money they're getting every week on something like aftershave. They could care less. I mean, Sea Org members, you know, some of them have the worst BO. I mean, they don't even use antiperspirant, you know. It's pretty bad. It's not like that with everybody, and you will get talked to if you're excessively smelly. Also, you can't get away with just being a total, you know, dick about it. But generally speaking, you know, Sea Org members are not into anything that has scents or smell to it, and they come down on that really hard. And no, David Miscavige, as far as I know, is not an exception to that rule. I don't know what he does in terms of aftershave, but if David Miscavige was walking around with smelly Irish Spring on or something, people would definitely notice. And then they would start wearing Irish Spring or something like that to emulate him. And then there goes that rule. And that never happened. So no, he doesn't do that. Andy Foster, in light of Roger Ailes' recent departure from Fox News, I have a question about Greta Van Susteren, who is a practicing Scientologist, right? She doesn't appear to meet the Playboy Mansion style that Ailes created around all the other female anchors. In fact, Greta dresses more like either a butch lesbian or a Mennonite school teacher, take your pick. But she really defies the Ailes uniform. Does Greta wield significant influence at Fox News? Well, I have no clue what Greta does or doesn't do at Fox News. I've never been privy to anything about Greta Van Susteren. But given the fact that she is now leaving, ostensibly over, you know, disagreements about pay, I don't think she wields too much power there because she's leaving there now. Sorry, I wish I had more data about her, but I don't. She never crossed my radar in any way the entire time I was in Scientology. Okay, and so we've reached the end of another episode. I would thank you very much for these questions, and I hope you found my answers helpful, enlightening, and interesting. Again, I'll remind you, check out my Critical Merchandise store. I think you guys will like some of what's there. And I will be putting up more products and whatnot. I want your feedback on it, because if there's anything that's not there that you would like to have there, let me know. I mean, there's a, you know, the Got Logic shirt is the one that has the full range of products available, and I'll add more to the other designs that I've created. So you'll see if you go to the Critical Merchandise web store there on Spreadshirt.com, you'll see what I'm talking about. So anyway, check it out. Would be awesome. And I'll see you guys next week. Bye-bye.